Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Yeah, that makes sense. That sounded like a dumbass right there. How does this work, goddammit?
Wait, okay.
We have to redo that whole thing.
I'm JP, and this is another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On this week's episode, we're going to specifically focus on music in the genre of metal. I'm currently joined for a special edition of our show with the Napalm Flesh crew. It's a feature that comes out every Thursday on Slug Magazine. We feature hardcore and metal and other things within that genre, and I'm really glad to have you all here. Thanks for joining me, guys.
You're welcome.
We've got Megan Kennedy, Henry Blashing, Ricky Vigil, Gavin Hoffman, and Dylan Chadwick. Let's start off with Dylan Chadwick. I should mention that we're focusing on different albums that have really been influential in your career as a music listener, as it were. And you've got the album Retaliation by Carnivore. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I'm actually holding the very cassette. Though Typo Negative has kind of replaced Life of Agony in the retrograde hardcore kid giggle shrieking obsession. There, Peter Steele was in a band before that called Carnivore, who were awesome. It was a trio of musicians who were all like 7 feet tall, and they just sang songs about the nuclear holocaust and like race wars and just like all kinds of shit that was supposed to like upset people and offend, and just the kind of satirical humor and just the sort of horrifying scenarios and also like the thrash metal element, sort of hardcore crossover, just all kind of sucked me in. So it sort of like laid the blueprint for like the kind of stuff I would listen to later on. So
let's listen to a cut from that album called Angry Neurotic Catholics, and then we can talk a little bit more about that album. Ten slashes in each arm. My only wrongdoing was being born human and followed by instincts. I never was happy, I never was changed, so I shall be extinct. The growing pool of crimson at last I have yawned. Witness my sight, witness penance. I don't need anyone, my soul is free. Death is tolerant dependence. I really enjoyed that track. Obviously, you did as well. What does that song bring to mind when you think about listening to it for the first time?
Well, there's just like a lot of nihilism. Like it's a narrative about Catholic guilt. Like I think Peter Steele's like pretty open about his like Catholic upbringing. Like it's a narrative about this kid who's like talking about all these like natural urges he has and how, you know, like Jesus loves him, but there's all these things that Jesus doesn't want him to do, and how he's like has this inner conflict. So he goes down to this basement, and listens to Black Sabbath, and slashes his wrists. Every Carnivore song is kind of a narrative like that, So I just like the nihilism and the terror and paranoia in his voice, and it just sounds so ugly and terrible, and I don't know, like as a like a 12-year-old or something, like it just made me feel like I was listening to something I wasn't supposed to be. So like here I am listening to a record where the singer is talking about these feelings that I was feeling, you know, like as a kid growing up in like a religious household and stuff like that. So that was just like sort of attractive to me, I guess.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot about a similar sort of upbringing. I think maybe other people around this circle can relate to hearing your first bit of punk or metal and going, yeah, I really relate to this.
Yeah.
Mine wasn't so much relating to it as I just kind of fell into it a lot. And Carnivore was one of those bands I went through in ninth grade. Was really when I got into, you know, a lot of the like SOD and MOD and, you know, some of that stuff. And Carnivore kind of came a little later, and that, and I remember hearing Carnivore the first time, and it was just like that. I was really at that time really, really, really into the USA for MOD album.
Oh gosh.
And I heard that Carnivore thing, and that just destroyed MOD.
Yeah.
I kind of went, I was like, I didn't think it could get any gnarlier.
Yeah, the best thing about Carnivore is just that it's like, you know, deep down that it's a satire. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of patriotic songs. Like, they used to open their concerts by playing the Star Spangled Banner and making fun of Sinead O'Connor. But like, mm-hmm. like, you know deep down that it's a joke, but like you sort of suspend your disbelief and just believe in this whole dystopian, paranoid like landscape that, that Peter Steele has created.
Yep.
Are there any other people here that related to that album or listened to it at all? Are you familiar with Carnivore, Henry?
Yeah, actually, I got into them after I got into Typo Negative, just because I remember listening to October Rust and Bloody Kisses and being like really into their gothic sound. This was back when I was first getting into metal, and when I heard Carnivore, it was just 10 decibels louder than anything else I'd ever heard, mm-hmm. and I was not ready for that. I remember just thinking about the range that Steele has with like Carnivore and his just fierce vocals. Like, there's just no other way to describe it. He doesn't really go into the ghouly part of his voice very often, you know?
Didn't, unfortunately. You know.
He's just a hard-ass Brooklyn dude.
He was.
Just, well, he was, yeah. Brooklyn. Rest in peace. You know, but like, yeah.
That was, and actually, you know, because it took me, you know, because I, like I said, in junior high and then early high school, listened to a whole bunch of that stuff. I always shied away from the Typo Negative thing because that was, to me, that was like, you know, gothic kids and doing weird shit type of thing. So I never really got into it. But a buddy of mine, quite a long time ago, actually, came over to my house and he brought a copy, a DVD copy of the film Nosferatu, which I love, but it had the Typo Negative soundtrack.
Oh, that's cool.
Did you ever see that?
No, but that sounds awesome.
They released a version of Nosferatu that the soundtrack was songs from October Rust. So that was the first Typo Negative that I heard and immediately fell in love with it just because of how well it actually fit with the movie. And it took me a good another year or more than that after that to realize that this was the same dude that was in Carnivore. Holy shit.
And it bears mentioning that this album came out in 1987 and you were holding up a cassette. It's old school stuff as far as music goes.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, cassettes sound really terrible, and this album sounds kind of terrible. And it just it sounds like a shovel just scraping like a gravel driveway. Like
it's the best way to listen to that too.
Yeah,
is a cassette. Seriously,
it sounds thrash. Always sounds really good in cassette. Mm-hmm. I think it's the only genre that I think holds up on.
It's its preferred delivery method.
Absolutely. Like none of this like analog LP shit. Like just give me a crappy tinny cassette and I'm good, man.
Well, big Walkman, some gnarly headphones.
Exactly, the kind of headphones with the felt on them.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. It always falls off, and then you just fucked.
Or it just rips through. And
so then everybody around you can hear what you're listening to.
Well, thanks for sharing that album with us, Dylan. I think that's a really good place to start because we're kind of going to go through a little bit of a chronology into the future, starting with Gavin Hoffman's selection. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this. It's from 1994, though. You know what? I'm going to try.
Okay.
Hvis Lyset Tar Os is
pretty
the name
close.
Of the album. Burzum, name of the artist. And the song is Detsam Engarvar that we're going to listen to here in a second.
It's Detsam Engarvar.
And the name of the album?
Is you're actually pretty close. I mean, my Norwegian is terrible, but, you know, because you've always got people who try to overpronounce or underpronounce. But the most common way that I've heard it pronounced is Hvis Lyset Tar Os.
Sounds way better when you do that.
I've had to say the name of the record a lot, so, you know, I could be totally wrong, and I could be having listeners as they hear this totally lambasting me and calling me a dipshit because I don't know what I'm talking about, but
will you give
that's
us a,
how I know.
Will you give us a quick rundown of the band before we listen to this song?
You mean a quick rundown of the one dude that does the band?
Exactly, yeah. I thought he was part of a collective, but
his name is Trent Reznor.
Yeah. Burzum, it is actually currently a one-man band from Norway. Varg Vikernes is the name of the guy that does the band, and he started doing that early on. I think it was in like 1990, maybe 91, that he started doing a solo project, and at that time it was called Uruk Hai because he was really into J.R.R. Tolkien and the Middle-earth mythology and all that. And actually the name Burzum is taken from the scribe on the quote-unquote One Ring from the J.R.R. Tolkien, the Middle-earth Lord of the Rings
so
deal.
It's, so it's like Elvish then.
Well, it actually the name Burzum actually in J.R.R. Tolkien's world translates to darkness.
Okay.
So that's a literal translation of it.
That's pretty metal.
That's very metal.
Super metal.
It bears mentioning this guy's also super metal and how he goes about dealing with his conflicts, right?
That's something, and that's, you know, and I'm just gonna, you know, go back on it, even, you know, more shameless self-promotion, you know, when I did interview him last year, I think it was last February or March that I interviewed him, that was one thing that I really, really tried to stray away from, was his extracurricular activities in the early 90s, because it's just been covered and talked about and done to death. If, you know, for anybody that's listening that is not aware, He's a convicted murderer. He killed
Euronymous.
Øystein Aarseth, who went by the name Euronymous, who was a founding member of the Norwegian band Mayhem. He was also found guilty of burning down 3 stave churches in Norway. He was sentenced to a life sentence in Norway, which equated to 14 years. He actually received an extra 2 or 3 years, I think, because he tried to escape because he was on a weekend leave and stole a car. And when they actually pulled him over, like the back of the car was filled with, they found rifles and GPS systems, like a whole bunch of shit back there. So he got some extra time on, but he was released actually on my birthday in May 2009.
How romantic.
I know. But yeah, so he has quite the history, but I, you know, personally kind of try and stay away from all of that because a lot of that was really, at that time, the whole Norwegian scene was, I mean, it was a bunch of kids. It was a bunch of, I mean, Aarseth was probably one of the older people in that quote unquote scene at the time, and he was in his early 20s. Everybody else was, you know, between the ages of 16 and maybe 21, 22. So it was just a bunch of young kids kind of taking on a little bit different punk aesthetic, so to speak, and acting out on that, and they just took it, you know, to totally different levels, both musically and, you know, in their personal lives.
Well, let's listen to a track from that album now. Will you pronounce the name of that song for me?
Det som en gang var.
Definitely gives us a taste of that song and his style a little bit. Do you want to talk about what resonates with that song and that album?
Well, that the first Burzum album, the full album that I ever heard was Philosophem, which came out in 1996. This album was actually released in 1994, even though it was recorded in 1992. He was kind of all over the place in terms of his songwriting, recording, and releasing. This is the first full-length Burzum album came out, I believe, in 1991, and he went to prison in 94. But in that time, he'd recorded 4 full-lengths and an EP. And the last full-length he recorded, which was Philosophem, and came out in 96, was after he was in prison. That was the first one I heard, and I still, to this day, is one of my favorite albums. But when I got Hvis Lyset Tar Os, that first song, Det som en gang var, on that, still just to this day, it happened the first time I heard it, and it still happens every time I hear it. I just get chills up my spine listening to that song. It's something in his, just to do with the presentation, especially the vocal presentation in that song, and the way that it's arranged, really, really, really got me interested in, you know, kind of seeing what the whole black metal thing was about. And for me, that was in kind of the towards the late 90s that I started getting into it. So I was a bit of a late comer. I was, you know, all of the gnarliness had already gone down in Norway, so I had to go back and research it. And through researching it, you know, Burzum was almost kind of a gateway black metal band for me. And this record specifically, and that song, it has just stuck with me ever since I heard it, and probably always will stick with me.
Now, a lot of people say, they complain about metal, they say, I don't understand what those guys are saying, mm-hmm. You know? And yeah. In this particular case,
it's all in Norwegian.
We really don't understand.
No, you really don't know what he's saying. I mean, you can get translation, you know, English translations on burzum.org, which is his official website. But actually, I've learned any Norwegian I know. I've actually learned through, you know, the band singing in Norwegian, specifically through this. And there are vocal parts in this song, and that had really stuck out to me just in how they were pronounced and how they sounded. And so actually going and looking at the translation to see what he's actually saying, it, you know, even made just that much more sense to me. He was one of the first of the black metal artists that really, you know, just made the conscious decision, no, I'm not going to do, you know, my vocals in English anymore, or at least for this record, I'm going to do them strictly in Norwegian. And it's kind of amazing to me that he got as quote-unquote world-renowned as he did musically. I mean, you know, his, again, the murder and the arsons and all that stuff, of course, that's going to be, you know, news anywhere. But really, a lot of people responded very, very favorably to the music, to the point where now he's kind of referred to as a hipster sellout, you know, whatever, which is, I just find kind of hilarious, because he's just doing the same thing he's always done. He's just out of prison and making music, and that's what he was doing before he went to prison, so.
It's just a hipster murderer.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so that's what all the hipsters do. You know, they grow big mustaches and go around and kill people and burn churches. It works.
It's like Charles Manson. You know.
Yeah, pretty much.
Also a hipster.
Does anybody else have any relationship with Burzum or this kind of black metal?
Yeah, actually I listened to a lot of his ambient albums that he released while he was in prison.
Daddy Balders and Hillichoff.
Oh gosh, he has this musical tonality that he accesses through all of his music that's just really dark and very meditative, I think, that a lot of black metal kind of tries to imitate but never really gets to that level that he took it to.
That's a lot of the Norwegian bands, they really started, especially Mayhem, really, really, when they started taking off, their main thing was to emulate kind of the quote-unquote big three, which was Venom, Bathory, and Hellhammer/ Celtic Frost. And when it came to, when Dark Throne did what a lot of people say is the first quote-unquote black metal album, which was A Blaze in the Northern Sky, and they just took it to a really, really stripped down, just ugly, ugly level with that album, and people, didn't know what to think of it. And then really the next one that came out was Burzum's self-titled, and he did it in more of a, like you say, kind of a meditative or a contemplative way, where it wasn't necessarily, meant to be, listened to as a soundtrack to go, tearing shit down and, being chaotic or anything. It was more type of one of those things to listen to just through your headphones in the dark, just by yourself. And a lot of bands really, really have tried to do that, and there are a ton of bands still trying to do that. And it's the same thing like with Dark Throne. You've got a million imitators of Dark Throne, but no one's ever going to be able to pull it off. Same thing with Burzum. You've got a million imitators, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, never even going to approach that level.
Nope.
Well, black metal was always about trying to distinguish itself from metal norms. Like, they were all like, they all thought that like, well, a lot of those guys thought that like death metal had become too commercial and stuff like that. And that's, I'm not a huge black metal guy, but I always did like sort of the youthful nihilism behind it of like trying to just become the antithesis of what was considered extreme in America.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like trying to just take it to the mud, like just like to this base, like primal level of, record on crappy equipment. Like we're not gonna have this goofy like it's not gonna be satanic at all. It's gonna be, I mean, people are gonna construe it as satanic, but it's gonna be like.
Well, they took a, they initially, and I don't know if they realized it or not, just in interviews I've read, things like that, some of them have alluded to it, or some of the artists I should say have alluded to it, and some of them distancing themselves from it, but they really kind of jumped onto a real kind of a punk rock ideal, so to speak. We're anti this, and we're nihilists, and we hate this, and we hate this, and the anti-establishment, and anti-American, and anti all of this. And so basically, what they were doing was just with a different kind of music. They were basically doing punk rock, but they were doing it, in just a different musical form. And some of it was really, really good, and really, really, interesting, and holds up to this day more than a lot of other bands around that time did, and especially a lot of the death metal that came out around that time. Earlier death metal I still really love, and some of the bands that really stuck to their guns through the 90s and did the same thing they had started doing I still really love. But the black metal guys really did kind of have a point that death metal, at least in the United States, had become, in the early 90s especially, had become really trendy and really watered down and really boring.
Oh yeah, Cannibal Corpse.
because all the big death metal bands, they all recorded at the same place, and they were all on the same record labels, and at Morris Sound, yep, and it all sounded exactly the same, and it got so boring.
Wasn't Cannibal Corpse actually in Ace Ventura?
They were.
That was like their commercial play.
Yep.
That's why my parents knew the Cannibal Corpse.
Oh, that was that terrible band in that Jim Carrey movie. Oh, God.
Well, thanks for taking us into the mid-90s, Gavin. We're gonna talk about the 2000s here in just a second. It's time for the weekly daily calendar rundown. Do you wanna do birthdays for me, Ricky?
Sure.
All right.
I wanna hear you sing.
I don't sing. Okay. You want me to do some death growls?
Yes. Yeah! Okay.
Yes, please.
Happy birthday, Mike Brown!
That's on Wednesday, May 9th. Mike Brown is one of our writers and a sales rep. You've read Mike Brown's column. He's all over the place. You've seen him. Currently, he's sporting a half beard. Oh, actually, I think he shaved that off. He had one side of his face shaved and one side wasn't. Anyway, May 9th is also...
Happy birthday, Jeremy Riley!
He is a design and office intern. Sometimes he writes for us, and he helps out with the slug games.
That is fucking amazing. You're doing great.
All right. Then we move on to Thursday, May 10th. We have some awesome birthdays on May 10th. I guess all birthdays are awesome. But anyway.
Happy birthday, Kent Farrington!
He's the designer. Yeah, he's been with us for a very long time. Kent's awesome. Then here, I think this next birthday person will appreciate this.
Definitely.
Happy birthday, Rebecca Vernon!
The most metal of all birthdays.
Yeah. Rebecca is a copy editor. She's been with Slug for a very long time. Sometimes she writes for us. She also is in Sabrosa. If you've ever listened to them, I love Sabrosa, one of my favorite bands. Thursday, May 10th, we also have...
Happy birthday, Scott Farley!
It doesn't get old, by the way. I'm
That's amazing.
Scott's a writer. Scott he reviews a lot of classical music, chamber music, stuff like that.
And now I'm going to just briefly run down the events for that week. On Wednesday, May 9th, Brian Jonestown Massacre and the Blue Angel Lounge will be at Urban. And Thursday, May 10th, besides the birthdays, it's Free Horchata Day at Alberto's. And Friday, May 11th, Localized with Burnell Washburn and Linus Stubbs, as well as YZE at Urban. Is that Wiz?
Wise.
Wise?
Yeah.
Why the fuck can't these kids just spell it?
I have to just spell them funny.
This show should be really cool. Burnell is a young, very talented MC. Linus is a really awesome producer. I think he's going to have some guest MCs coming up during his set. And Wise is a pretty good young rapper as well.
And Saturday, it's going to be a kind of a shoddy, subpar metal showcase at Burt's Lounge featuring Eagle Twin and this band called Invaders.
Invaders.
They're an Iron Maiden cover group.
Yeah, speaking of bands that don't know how to spell. And there actually is a story behind that that not everybody is aware of, and if you'd care me to share, I can share
it. Is it about Iron Maiden?
Please, yeah.
So, when we transitioned from Spur, which was the original name of the band, to Invaders, we got into a small pissing contest with a band in California that was also called Invaders. They were just being douchebags, really. And so, for some reason or other, I believe it was Phil, it was our vocalist, that just says, you know what? Let's take all the vowels out. And we did that and looked at it and went, N-V-D-R-S. That doesn't make any sense at all. Well, we can put the I back in.
Yeah.
Like, that's, okay, that's really random. Let's take all the, you know, let's take the other vowels out, but leave the I in. Okay.
That's pretty deep.
That was really deep, right?
Yeah.
But, so we ended up doing it, and it just stuck. And, you know, even though the name obviously is pronounced Invaders, and we do know how to spell, although Phil did try to write it on one of the record holders at Raunch and misspelled it.
Spelled the misspelling.
Yes. But that's actually why it is spelled that way, and just all, you know, in all caps. That's just how metal we are.
Yeah.
For the listeners at home, if they didn't get that already, Gavin is in the band Invaders, and it's not going to be entirely a terrible show. Eagle Twin.
Eagle Twin.
I saw both of these bands, Eagle Twin and Invaders, at the Napalm Flesh Record Store Day Showcase, and both of them fucking killed it.
In all fairness, yes, really good job.
Yeah,
really
so just incredibly loud, both of these guys. Eagle Twin is, haven't seen Eagle Twin live,
Anybody in earshot that has heard this, if you have not heard Eagle Twin, you are either dead, living under a rock, or are just plain fucking retarded. I cannot say enough good things about Eagle Twin. That band is absolutely incredible.
Plan B Theater Slam, which is where Utah playwrights spend 23 hours writing short plays, and then you join them on the 24th to see them all. We've got Social Distortion doing an all-ages show at the Depot.
We should also mention that we have an interview with Mike Ness in our May issue. It's actually pretty cool. We actually asked our readers to submit questions for Mike Ness via our Facebook and Twitter account. So, you know, it was a unique approach to the story, something we don't usually do, and I think it turned out pretty well.
So look forward to that. Also, we are asking right now for you to call us at our voicemail line and let us know some fond memories you have about the Heavy Metal Shop. It's going to be their anniversary soon. So hit us up at 858-233-9324. I'm sure Kevin would like to hear all your thoughts about the Heavy Metal Shop. But just really briefly, I'm sure everyone here has been to the Heavy Metal Shop, right?
Happy fucking anniversary, Kevin. Fucking amazing to have been around and doing it for that long.
Yeah, this will be the 25th anniversary of the Heavy Metal Shop. It's rad to have
so cool.
A store like that in Salt Lake. And we're actually going to bring Kevin in later in June to have him on the podcast and talk about all of our favorite heavy metal memories with him. So that'll be a rad show. So I encourage everyone to call in.
I want to be in on that.
Okay. You can call in.
I'm not calling in. I want to come in and hang out and do that shit.
And for more events, go to slugmag.com, check out our daily calendar on the front page, and you can pick up a hard copy. It comes out every month. We've got the calendar in the back of the magazine. You can also check it out on the Slugmag iPhone app. Let's get back into things right now with Megan Kennedy and her selection. The album is Blackwater Park, and the artist is Opeth. And this album came out in 2001. Do you want to talk a little bit about this album and what it means to you?
Yeah, so at this point in my metal career, like I found this album after years after I came out. But at this point in my listening to metal, I was into a lot of thrash stuff, Lamb of God, Chimera, like the new American metal movement, definitely some of the heavier stuff, the industrial, like Fear Factory. Hearing Blackwater Park, hearing Opeth was a turning point for me because it really introduced the instrumental side of metal. Their transitions and their technicality were just unlike anything I'd heard, and it was so much like a fairy tale, like a really dark, gothic fairy tale. The melodies they use, Mike Lagerfeld is just a genius with his music. So this took me to a new level where now I'm much more progressive in the technical aspects of metal, and this is really where that started, just kind of showing me how metal can be used as a musical weapon.
Yeah, these guys are super technical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's really where that got started for me, was just realizing how far metal can be stretched as a genre, that it isn't always about the anger. Like, the anger is still there and you can still have that, but you can be express it in different ways. And it just seemed to reach different heights for me. Like, it's very much a narrative. His poetry and his lyrics is just unmatched as far as I'm concerned, especially in metal. They never get that beautiful flow. It's almost like prose, like, I don't want to say girly or anything, but just more, just
it's
not.
Like girly.
Yeah, but not in the way that sounds, you know, just, it's just different. It's
not in a sexist way.
Right.
Prettier.
Prettier, yeah. He's paying more attention to the way he's building his sentence structures, and it's a writer geek thing, I guess.
Now we're into sunshine and rainbows metal.
Let's listen to a selection now from Blackwater Park. This is Bleak from Opeth. Thoughts on that song, specifically that transition?
Yeah, it was hard to pick because it's a long song. Like, their songs are notoriously decadent, but it was hard to pick a section because there's so many good transitions in it. That one I like because it goes from that heavy distortion, his screaming that's so demonic and so deep and thick, and then his singing voice is just, it's almost like two different people.
Wait, what? That's the same guy?
That's the same guy. That's Mike Lagerfeld. and he's influenced, Opeth's influenced by so many different genres, and jazz and blues and folk, like the 70s folk rock, like Blue Oyster Cult. He's got a huge vinyl collection. Their latest album was recorded on authentic 70s equipment because they wanted that sound and they don't substitute. He's a kind of guy that's so dedicated to his music, he will spend the money and work harder to get the exact sound he needs as opposed to digitally producing it later in the studio and making it sound 70s or making it sound analog. So he's got a dedication to music that's just, it shows through so much in the passion of what he creates.
Do you remember when you first heard that song, when you first heard Bleak?
Yeah, broke my heart. Like, just that, the melody in it is just so deep and dark and so, like, primal almost. Like, whereas Carnivore is kind of like a primal anger, like just that, this is like that, just that more somber side, like if you got sad about stuff as opposed to angry about stuff. But it's that same deep darkness. I think there's a strictly European sound to the darkness as well that you don't get with a lot of American.
Well, with Opeth, bands. That was a band that, one of the bands that kind of ushered in the, I hate to say it, but the kind of quote-unquote Swedish sound. Mm-hmm. Because you have the Swedish death metal stuff, but then you've also got the other side, which is like Opeth and Catatonia, so that was a perfect, you know, mesh when they came here.
Oh, that was such a good
in
show.
Concert. And Catatonia, you know, I love Catatonia, their early stuff and their later stuff, I love them to death. But it did kind of usher in, and it really does have, you know, kind of a feel. It's another one of those types of bands that there are a ton of bands now that want to be Opeth, and they can't do it. But that's actually bringing Opeth into the conversation now shows really the kind of interesting dichotomy or the width and scope, really, of the different subgenres of metal, where you have bands like, you know, Carnivore was a great example and a great lead, and that was just so raw and so just angry and just so, you know, fuck it all. And then you get into Burzum, and Burzum's just doing everything by himself, you know, all the music by himself, and recording it, you know, on just shitty equipment. And then, you know, getting into Opeth, that they get so grandiose and they're so involved and so.
But it's not overbearing.
No, but they're so involved and so passionate about what, you know, how they want their music to be presented and how they want it to be recorded and the sounds that they want. That, you know, just kind of runs. That's why, you know, metal to me is one of the most fascinating genres of music, because of how many subgenres there are and because of how passionate about it. Doesn't matter what the subgenre is, both the musicians and the fans are about it. Don't see that, you know, with your top 40 bands and your, you know, even with punk rock, you don't see that anymore. People being that passionate about their music, both recording and listening.
This is actually one of the first albums that introduced me to those other subgenres of music, because I think he does take a lot of that Swedish death metal sound, but he really twists it, and he really doesn't. He doesn't do the traditional progressive rock thing, which is let's have 30-minute guitar solos and saxophones and weird instruments and time signatures. He really just, he makes it sound cohesive in a way that a lot of other bands didn't.
Well, that's Blackwater Park and Catatonia's Last Free Deal Gone Down. Those two records, I think they came out the same year, actually, in 2001, or they came out very close to each other. And both of those records have that kind of, and you know, the term progressive with metal gets thrown around a lot, but they really were, by definition, they were very progressive records. They were a little different than what the bands had done before, and they kind of brought in some different elements and some different ways of really thinking about what they were doing. And I mean, I remember specifically when Last Free Deal Gone Down came out, Tonight's Decision had come out, and I remember people hating it, and then Last Free Deal Gone Down came out, and people despised it initially, and then, you know, and same with Blackwater Park, because people wanted Orchid Part 2, and they didn't quite get it. But now, you know, going back and listening to, you know, Blackwater Park over a decade later, that record is so strong.
Opeth has
so strong.
That they always get that retaliation as soon as an album comes out. Same happened with Ghost Reveries, because they added the synthesizer and everything. Every time they add something new or change something just a little bit, everybody gets all pissed, and then they listen to it later and they're like, oh wait, okay, never mind, it was fine. It sounds really good. So they're really good at what they do, and they don't give a fuck. They make what they want. We did the interview with Frederick when they were here, their bassist, when they came last year, and he expressed that, because everybody's talking about Heritage, this new one, because it's not heavy at all. It's very folk rock. It's very, oh, but it's so beautiful.
And is that on slugmag.com?
Yeah, that should be on the Napalm Flesh, yeah, on the archives. He was talking about the backlash from that, everybody talking about how it's not metal enough for Opeth or for them, and they just don't care. It's because it's them metal as an attitude, and how you, I mean, there's definitely a skeleton of music that you're building around, but metal's definitely about how you're presenting stuff and what you're speaking of and how you're reacting to the world. I think it's very much, it's a lot deeper than just being heavy. They're just those guys that have kind of always led the way. People will retaliate at first, but then kind of fall in line almost and try to become them, try to
We were kind of having,
reproduce that.
Before we came in, we were kind of having a discussion about that, Henry and myself, about, you know, a totally different album. But I think really that a lot of some of the best music, metal or no, that is out there, you know, just through the years, initially the impact that it has, people don't like it, and they don't get it, and they don't understand it. And that's what, you know, anytime you get music that kind of challenges you and really forces you to have to actually re-listen and re-listen and re-listen and try and, you know, make you actually either really, really like the record or really, really hate the record, those are the records that have the most impact. And it really shows, you know, to a point, some of the dedication from people that really, you know, you get a record, fucking hate it, and, you know, initially when you hear it, but the fact that you really want to like it, and you go back and you keep listening and you keep listening until it actually does, I mean, I hate the term, but it does grow on you. And it, you know, I can't tell you how many albums that I own that I just fucking despised when I first heard them, and now they're, you know, some of my favorite records ever. And you know, I'm not the hugest fan of Opeth anymore. Like I said, you know, Blackwater Park was, I think, the last thing they did that I really, really liked. But at least they actually do that, and their fans do that, and that is they listen to it, and sure, they may hate it at first, but they keep going and keep going and keep going, and it grows on them, and it turns into something that you could say would be groundbreaking, I guess.
And I think that a lot of the time, Opeth was kind of dealing with that sort of, everyone's looking for something familiar to them in the music. And Blackwater Park was one of those albums where they really went a different direction, but they still had a very familiar sound.
Exactly.
And it didn't sound like such a departure, because I think, what was the one before? This was Still Life, correct?
Still Life.
Yeah, Still Life had a very similar tone to Blackwater Park. It's a completely, it's like apples and oranges almost, because you have just this very narrative Still Life album, and Blackwater Park is just this completely different entity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk, as Gavin was mentioning, about albums that you guys both really liked, something influential. We've got the artist, the Lord Weird Slowfeg.
Yeah, the Lord Weird Slowfeg. Or Slowfeg?
Slowfeg.
Alright.
And the album is Traveler. Will you talk a little bit about the impact that album had really briefly? Then listen to a song.
Well, okay, so Traveler was actually an album that's a concept album written as a tribute to this tabletop role-playing game called Traveler, where you navigate space on like spaceships and your space crews, and the entire album is littered with these really small but very, very targeted references to the role-playing game. And I remember this was one of the first albums I listened to where that nerdy side of metal, where it's just, it's unabashed. Metal has always embraced its influences wholeheartedly, with no irony, with no sort of restraint. And I think that Slowfeg really was one of those bands that was doing that a lot. Their first albums were all based on a comic book from, I can't remember the name of the magazine, but it was called Slain. And it was basically a Conan the Barbarian story about a Celtic warrior. And if you listen to this, to the album that came out before Traveler, Down Among the Dead Men, almost every single song relates back to the comic in some way. But Traveler, I think, was the album where they really shone the most. They really had the most cohesive sound that they've had throughout their entire career. And while I love every single album they've put out, I think that Traveler was the most cohesive and the most fundamentally, like, Slowfeg album.
Let's listen to their song now, Asteroid Belts, from the 2003 album Traveler. Great track there from the Lord Weird Slowfeg. I'm admittedly not very familiar with that. These guys are not from America, though.
No, they are. They're from Pennsylvania, and they
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and originally, and they actually relocated to San Francisco. And a good friend of mine continuously compares this band to another band from Pennsylvania called Argus that's recently come out. You can kind of see it a little bit. Not really. Part of the reason this was so influential to me was that you listen to the riffs on this album and they just don't stop. These guys are the masters of the 2-minute metal song.
Oh, man.
Like, as evidence in that song.
Oh, yeah.
They're just doing it.
Yeah, that song's 2.5 minutes long, and there is not a moment of breathing room in it. And Mike Scalzi was actually, I think part of the reason this album was the most cohesive was because Mike Scalzi worked on almost all of the music by himself, except for the last song, Addendum Galactus, which was John Cobbett.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, it's really hard to explain because they've always had their own way of playing music that kind of recalls like the first couple of albums, like Iron Maiden.
Very, very new wave of British heavy metal.
Yeah.
Influence type stuff, at least riff-wise, song structure-wise, and time of song, very, very punk rock. Yeah, that record, that Traveler, I mean, it just does, you know, from start to finish, it does not stop. There's no breaks, and there's no breakdowns, and there's no breathing room or anything. It is just riff after riff after riff after riff, and it's just continuous, and it's just, and I mean straight up, just, you know, like, you know, Dylan just said, nerd alert. through and through, and it's really good.
Yeah.
Dylan, are you familiar with these guys at all?
Not at all. This first time. I'm familiar with all of their influences, though, so that's cool.
That's the good thing about this type of format. I think we all get to experience different people's music styles and then stuff to listen to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ricky, are you familiar with the Lord Weird Slowfeg?
I'm not slaughtering that Slowfeg. I'm actually not familiar with them, but what Gavin just said about new wave of British heavy metal sound and punk rock style and structure, that sounds like metal boner time.
When they were touring with this record, like I said, and they came here, you know, a couple of times, very, very quick succession, they turned into kind of a almost a flavor of the week type band. I couldn't go, at least, you know, me personally around that time, I couldn't go anywhere and not see someone wearing a Lord Weird Slowfake shirt. And then they just vanished, you know, and they just, you know, people stopped caring about them, at least, you know, vocally around here. That record specifically, Traveler, I still own that record. I still listen to it once every couple of months because it is, I mean, it's a solid, solid album. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it really is kind of like a metal boner. I mean, really, it is. It's one of those records that, you know, you'll love it. If you can get a copy of it, you'll fucking love it. It's really good.
Just in the sample we heard, it shows all the best things about metal, really, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Short amount of time. I like my metal songs short. Like, I like my ladies. And and that's good. It just hits hard, it hits heavy, and then you're done with it. Ricky Vigil, time now to go to 2006 for No Heroes. It's a Converge release. Can you talk a little bit about that album and why you chose it as something that you really
enjoyed? Yeah, and I grew up, I think Gavin can probably relate, maybe not in the same way, but I grew up listening to a lot of punk rock, but my style of punk rock was more the pop punk, Fat Record style of punk rock. So if a band didn't sound like Screeching Weasel or Jawbreaker, I really didn't give a fuck. But anyway, I moved in with a kid who was really into heavier music, and he bought Converge, No Heroes. The album was getting a lot of really good reviews on a lot of the websites I was visiting and a lot of the magazines I was reading, so I figured, what the hell, I'll try it. And I did not like it. Like, the vocal style just wasn't anything I was used to. I think that Jacob Bannon sounds like a werewolf vomiting up a chainsaw.
Wow.
And yeah, I just could not get into it. I couldn't get into the weird, fast, jagged structures. I don't know. Eventually, I kept listening to it, and somehow it just clicked. And now Converge is one of my favorite bands. They introduced me to all different kinds of heavier music, not just their style. I guess you could call it metalcore, even though that's a horrible, dirty word. But yeah, Converge really impacted me in a lot of really big ways.
The word I would use for this kind of music, though, because I come from an era that describe it as such as hardcore. Is that even worse than metalcore?
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I did. I listened to, not as much as Dylan. Dylan is a hardcore expert here. Even my definition of hardcore was like, was it made before 1985? Awesome, that's hardcore. Black Flag's hardcore. But yeah, I didn't like anything after that. So even if I called Converge a hardcore band back then, I wouldn't have cared at all. But yeah, most people would classify them as a hardcore band rather than a metal band.
Now let's listen to the title track from No Heroes. This is Converge from their 2006 album. So you initially heard these guys and you didn't know what to make of it. Did you even understand you were saying No Heroes at points, or what were your thoughts?
I think I understood that part. One of the things that Gavin was kind of saying earlier about Burzum, I don't even think it's so much about what he's saying so much as the feeling. And looking up actually the lyrics, Converge has some really cool lyrics. They're all, actually a lot of them are kind of like inspirational. I know that sounds kind of lame. Just the energy, the anger, just letting all of that shit go. I didn't really listen to stuff like that. I listened to songs about guys who didn't have girlfriends and who were bummed about it, but still listened to records and ate bubblegum. But yeah, this is totally different, but it's totally awesome in its own way.
And that's actually, I gotta, you know, just as on a personal note here with Ricky, I gotta give Ricky a lot of props and a lot of respect, because when I first met Ricky, when he started working here, he was still really, you know, that was just all about the bubblegum and the pop punk and stuff like that. And he has branched out in leaps and fucking bounds since then. And if this, you know, if No Heroes was one of the records, or if not the record that did it for him, fucking kudos to Converge. I haven't really been a huge fan of Converge since Jane Doe. That's really the only record I think that,
it's
well,
their masterpiece.
It really is. And I really like Petitioning the Empty Sky.
No, yeah, great one.
That was the first one that I heard. I really like that record.
When Forever Comes Crashing.
I wasn't a fan of When Forever Comes Crashing. Jane Doe, they're never going to top it. It was, you know, it was just that good. And since then, and I'm not going to go off on tangents anymore, but I don't feel it. I just don't really care. I just, you know, Converge is one of those bands that, you know, I've seen a million times live and heard all the records and all that good shit, and it's just old hat. It just doesn't it doesn't do much for me.
One of the cool things about Converge, though, one of the other ways that I really appreciate them, this kind of comes from the whole punk rock thing, is they have, or at least Jacob Bannon, their singer, has a label called Death Wish.
Yep.
There's a lot of really cool bands on Death Wish that also help broaden my horizons. I'm still discovering cool bands on Death Wish.
Well, and from Death Wish is, you know, you get spawned from Death Wish or related to Death Wish is A389.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, all of that stuff. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying I have no respect for Converge
definitely.
Or, you know, I hate those guys or anything like that. It's just, you know, the music. It's I'm so picky with the genres of the music that I listen to and then the bands within said genres.
Yeah.
So you can get me, you know, three bands that sound exactly alike on the same label. I'm going to love one of them and hate the other.
That's just,
you know, unfortunately, it's just kind of how it is. And Converge, with definitely due respect, has spawned kind of a whole lot of copycat artists in their own right. And
definitely.
I'm not going to name names right now. But they've spawned a whole lot of copycat artists, and some of them are great and some of them are fucking worthless.
Even aesthetically though, Converge is so influential, like his artwork or not.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like Jacob Bannon's, the art that he does, like, I mean, yeah, it's, I mean, a lot of people just call it like that, you know, that Photoshop effect, but I mean, he's like created some real iconic, like that Jane Doe.
The Jane Doe,
cover.
The Jane Doe, and
there was
the
a
hand
time
for You
where,
Fail Me.
Yeah,
and,
or the American Nightmare logo or whatever,
yeah,
but like,
Nightmare.
there was a time where you could not go to a show from like 01 to 04 when you did not see somebody wearing a Converge hoodie with like that Jane Doe
with
logo.
The Jane Doe
like,
face, yep.
Like, I mean, Converge, I mean, he's like one of the most hardest working people in hardcore. And then Scott Ballou, like, records all those
cool
bands. Or Kurt Ballou, I mean,
yeah.
Sorry. He records all those awesome bands. Like, Converge rules. Like, I'm not so stoked on the new records either, but Converge definitely rules.
In terms of what they brought to the table, I will definitely give to them. I think Converge did, you know, for kind of the crossover metal hardcore type thing in the late 90s, early 2000s, what Integrity and Ringworm did.
Yeah, for sure.
In, you know, the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
It was just, it's kind of the same thing, just in a little different fashion.
Yeah, it's a little more death, like, I don't know, like, Jacob Bannon was definitely, like, a fan of death metal, like, in his vocal style, and that wasn't, like, a super prevalent thing in hardcore. You got like the whole Victory style thing where hardcore is really straightforward and stompy and moshy, and Converge is just like chaotic and coming out of left fields. So.
Yeah, they also have, even on this album, they have like slower, weirder shit.
Mm-hmm.
On their last album they had, what's the dude from Neurosis' his name?
Scott Kelly?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's Scott Kelly.
Is it Scott Kelly or, I'm not going to take up a whole fuckload of time so I can't remember.
Anyway, they have slow songs, like the dude from Neurosis is on a really slow song in their most recent album, and they have the dudes from Genghis Tron.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people kind of look at them and kind of think, oh, it's chaotic, crazy shit that was super popular 10 years ago, but I think it's weird to see them branch out into kind of weird stuff, but I still love Converge. I love to see them changing, even if it is ever so slightly. But yeah, they're always going to be one of the bands that I really love because of the way they got me into more and more different music and appreciate all kinds of new different stuff.
And that's what this show's been about, though. The albums that really maybe sparked an interest in a certain genre or set you off in different directions. And I really appreciate you guys coming by today. And Lady,
thank you.
I should mention. Thanks for the Napalm Flesh blog, as usual. Check it out every Thursday. Go to slugmag.com and check that out. Anybody, let's just go around maybe and mention what you wrote recently and for people to check it out, starting with you, Megan.
Most recent interview was about 2 weeks ago with the Safety Fire, and this week will actually be Jeff Loomis from Nevermore. He just came through the solo stuff, so it's going to be awesome.
By the time you hear this, that will have been up for a few weeks.
Oh, okay.
But it'll be still as awesome as it was when it went up.
It will be equally as awesome as the day I type it up.
Yeah.
Maybe not, though, guys.
You know what, JP?
Okay. Gavin?
I haven't done any interviews or anything lately. I did do kind of a short burst back on and do some reviews. I don't know if they're going to be in print or if they'll be online. I can't even remember everything I reviewed except for the Uncurbed Warfare split on Sacred Plague, which was fucking amazing. And then I'm currently in the process of, and it's definitely fitting, reviewing the new Burzum record, which will be out later in May.
That review will be in the June issue. You can count on it.
Good.
I recently, the most metal thing, I guess it's not even that metal. Anyway, I interviewed Earth, who are on Southern Lord, highly influential drone, doom kind of band. Not so much droney or doomy anymore. Anyway, that was in our March issue. You can read that online.
Which was a good interview, by the way.
Thanks.
I'm hoping to do something with Corrosion of Conformity. Hopefully that works out, so hopefully that will have happened by the time
we'll
you guys
try to make it happen.
But recently I reviewed the new Municipal Waste album, and I did not like it.
I will second that.
It was not that good.
Municipal Waste will not fuck you up.
And Henry?
My most recent interview was with Cannibal Corpse's drummer. I also did an interview for the April issue with Behemoth's Nurgle, which I had a lot of fun with.
Are you just saying nonsense words? What?
Okay. So, yeah. Behemoth's frontman, Nurgle, Adam Darsky.
Yeah.
He and I had a long conversation, and he opened my eyes to the fact that Salt Lake City is the pornography capital of the United States.
It is. Yeah.
I had no idea up until that point.
Yep. Yeah.
So it took a Polish musician to figure that out.
Per capita, Utah downloads the most porn in the United States.
I don't. I'm going to say,
yeah. Sexual repression, man.
Thanks again for joining me, guys and lady. And thanks for listening to another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. What are some of your favorite brew pubs around the state? Do you have a special pub in your heart that you'd like to have a dinner at with freshly brewed drinks? Send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We may just play you on the show. You can also tweet us at Slug Soundwaves. It's a really good way to reach us as well. We're always on Twitter. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design was by T. Doan, with technical design by Kate O'Connor. Next week's episode, we're going to go down south to St. George and preview the club Go-Go 37. Talk with photographer Dennis Meekum, and This Light of R is a really interesting exhibit at the Leonardo. We'll get down to the information about that and what you need to know. Thanks again, everybody, for joining me. It's been another really good edition of the Napalm Flesh Roundtable.
Hooray. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.